You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You feel this nervousness on the phone there?
Sir, I've been trying to make an urgent phone call up there.
I don't think it's something I want to do on an overseas phone.
You gotta make some phone calls. Hang up the phone. Prank call. Prank call.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Packernet After Dark. This is the call-in show, the Packernet Podcast Network. If you'd like to call in, if you'd like to participate in the show, please feel free to do so. The phone number here is 608-501-0718. New callers go directly to the front of the line. Just so you know, today we're going to just be doing this. You might be wondering, why is this at the 4 o'clock slot or whatever? I'm going through the prospects. We're running out of time. I've been procrastinating. There's been a decent enough, you know, going on to talk about. But we got to get started. So I don't know that. I don't know exactly how the schedule is going to go, but I know that I needed some extra time. I'm looking at linebackers, and I didn't want to just hurry through it so that I could do a podcast and give you sort of some general thoughts. I honestly don't even know. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to go about using my thoughts on things. We'll try to figure that out. But for the meantime, I didn't have anything else. I had to choose, bottom line. Am I going to watch linebackers, or am I going to record the podcast? I'm going to watch linebackers. We'll figure out where to go from there. But now you're all caught up. And by the way, feel free to get your linebacker questions in. That'll be some way that we can use the useless information in my brain. But without further ado, let's get started with Craig.
Hey, Ryan, it's Craig from Indiana.
Hey.
Finished listening to your mock draft, I think it was Monday, had done one myself, and I thought I'd kind of run it by you. And if you're not reviewing other people doing
that's fine.
Mocks, that's okay. You can just
you can send. I just don't generally have very good feedback on it. I think hopefully I'll be able to provide slightly better feedback when I go through a second time. But even still, like I don't like, I know how negative the whole mock draft community is. So I think it's just naturally when people offer me their mock drafts, my usual response is like, yeah, that's great, man. That like the point is like, I know you like it. You drafted it because basically that was the perfect scenario for you as far as, you know, the way the board fell and everything else. I know that because you made every single selection. So, I mean, I'll try to give some slightly constructive criticism if I come up to it, but at the same time, I know it's just my opinion. So I have no issue with people, whether it's on social media or on the podcast, sending it. I just don't know if it's great content because I never have good feedback. But let's see if we can break that curse. Go ahead, Craig. Give me what you got.
Need this. But anyway, did a little trading throughout this one. Pick 25 was a Kool-Aid. Pick 44 was Newbin, so that was a trade.
I like him.
And then the defensive tackle from Clemson was 58. Wallace, linebacker from Kentucky at 88. Bullard at 96. McCormick, offensive guard at 129. Gonclaves, offensive tackle at 159. I don't remember hearing much about him. I think everyone else I've listed, I've probably heard some input on, but didn't know if you had any, or if you've already reviewed that or have any comments about that guy. Marshawn Lloyd, a running back at the USC, was at 169. 179 was Devonshire, cornerback from Pittsburgh. And then Edu Juan, the linebacker from Washington, at 219. And then Vaki, the safety from Utah, 235. So still got 11 picks, plus in those trades that I was doing, got a third round for next year from Las Vegas. Nice. And a fifth round from Jacksonville. So it's all kind of good to have 13 picks and then a couple more for next year when we're hosting the draft. We might be able to play with those to move up more. So anyway, if you want to shed any insights on any of those, that would be great. Thanks again for everything you do. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, I thought about pausing for each one. I didn't have a ton on, aside from the top guys, right? And even that is very shallow. But I do like Kool-Aid and I like Newbin. I know Newbin had poor RAS, whatever. I don't super care, to be honest. I really do like him as a player. I'm not over the moon about the guy. Like, I would, you know, but as far as the safeties go, I do appreciate him. If we don't draft him, I really couldn't care less. And honestly, based on value, there's probably guys later on that I like from a value standpoint more, but I like him. A lot of the other guys, I either never watched them, so I couldn't tell you, or it's like Aurora Row where I don't have much by way of notes. I don't even want to read it because it's so stupid, but more or less it's like he's fine. You know, it's good, not great, I guess. Good against the run and the pass. Doesn't seem like, you know, one dimensional in that regard. But, you know, nothing stood out as negative. I mean, as far as if that was how the draft ended, I think we'd all be happy with it, especially picking up additional compensation. We'd probably be sitting here saying, Goody does it again kind of thing, you know. But like I said, as I go through again, and I'm trying to do a lot more prospects, hilariously, I was doing linebackers, and you mentioned one, and I don't even think, let me pull up my spreadsheet. I just closed it for the sake of being done for the day. This isn't even the right one. Anyways, you listed somebody that I don't even think is on my list, and I'm just sitting here like, come on, you got to be freaking kidding me. But that's how it goes. I'm never going to be able to get enough prospects in.
Ryan, what's up, Kyle from Madison? How you doing, buddy?
Good.
Well, that's great.
Good.
That's
yeah.
Really great.
Good.
So I think it's maybe Garrett that called in the other day and said this, but I've been thinking this too. And his point was, hey, we just nailed an awesome draft last year. What are the chances that we do that back to back? You know, let's maybe trade down. Let's get additional picks because it's unlikely you're going to knock it out of the park like that. And I've been thinking like that too. But then I was thinking, you know, I wonder if that's actually true because I don't know. I just kind of thought like Garrett did. I believe it was Garrett. If not, I apologize. But I went to check it out here. So I'll try to get this in one call. But actually, it turns out that in recent history, it's actually more likely that you have, like, just totally knock it out of the park drafts in back-to-back years. Lombardi had several in the 1950s. And Ron Wolf tended to do, like, he had a great one in 90, he had a great one in 92. He tended to skip a year or two. Ted Thompson, on the other hand, so get this, right? So he goes 2005, and the people I count here, if you made it to be an all-pro, kind of, you're on the list. You're not kind of, if you're an all-pro, you're on the list. So look at this. So Thompson, 05, Rodgers, Nick Collins, boom. You could just have Rodgers on there, and that would qualify it. But he also got Collins. Probably would have been a Hall of Famer if his neck stenosis didn't take him out. Then he backs that up the next year in 06 with drafting Greg Jennings, Darren College, and A.J. Hawk. Those are two damn good drafts next to each other, right? Then Thompson. I mean, Thompson, man, he's got to be, like, the greatest GM we've had. I mean, some of these drafts, I mean, I love the guy, but I didn't realize it was quite as amazing as it is here. In 2008, Thompson drafted Jordy Nelson, JerMichael Finley, and Josh Sitton. And then he followed that draft up in 2009 with B.J. Raji, Clay Matthews, and T.J. Lang. I mean, bro. I mean, that's two just absolutely disgusting. disgusting back-to-back drafts. But wait, Thompson did it again in 2013. He took Bakhtiari, Eddie Lacy, and Micah Hyde. And then he followed that up again in 2014 with Davante Adams and Corey Lindsley, man. So actually, if we're keeping with at least recent history, or at least Brian's predecessor, it is actually more likely that he knocks it out of the park this year than not, if you're just looking at 05, 06, 08, 09, 13, 14, man. So really, let's go, Packers!
Couple things stand out. First of all, I agree. Make hay while the sun is shining. My mind immediately went to Seattle. I've obviously trashed their GM several times, but I mean, these things kind of come in waves, right? You look at when he was a good GM, he was a great GM. You know, I mean, it was in a very brief window. Let's see. It looks like, I'm not even positive that this is the same GM. This was a long time ago, but 2010. You know, he gets Earl Thomas and Golden Tate and Cam Chancellor, right? I mean, just, and Russell Okung, right? Okay, so dominant. 2011, he pulls in KJ Wright and Richard Sherman, probably some others too. They're just not standing out. The next year, Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner, and Russell Wilson. And then that's about it. It really falls off after that. So, if you're on a hot streak, don't give up what you're doing. Point number two, are we saying that 2022 was not a good year with this idea that it's unlikely to repeat? Because, I mean, Quay isn't maybe the greatest, but I think that was a decent pick. Devontae Wyatt, I think, is a great pick. Christian Watson was a really good pick. Romeo Doubs in the fourth round was a great pick. Zach Tom in the fourth round was an elite pick. Kingsley Enagbare in the fifth round was a good pick. And Rashid Walker in the seventh round is elite tier. 2022 was a freaking grand slam, potentially better than 2023, depending on how these things pan out. I mean, Lucas Van Ness is a question mark. Luke Musgrave seems like he might be good, but we don't know. Jaden Reed looks great. Kraft, we'll see. Wooden, we'll see. Clifford, probably not going to be anything but a backup. Wicks looks good, we'll see. Carl Brooks, we'll see. Anders Carlson looks bad. Valentine, not bad for a seventh round pick. I don't know. I think it's a tight race, at least between 2022 and 2023. The third point that I had is I don't necessarily understand the point of kicking the can down the road, because what are we really accomplishing? It's unlikely we're going to repeat. So send them on to next year when we get our juju back, or what? Because all we're doing is we're taking our picks and we're sending them to another year that's just as unlikely to be as successful. So I would say just make the freaking picks. I'm not going to get that deep into the superstition of it. But if I had to lean one way or another, I would say he's on a hot streak, and just do not take your foot off the gas, because eventually the steam's going to run out, right? It happens to everybody. There's no GM that is just elite for all time and retires at 70 years old, just on top of the world. Like, it just, you go on hot streaks, and usually it's like a year and you can build your whole career around that. Gutekunst was fortunate enough to build his career on, first of all, Jordan Love, and then hit on 2022 and 2023, right as Jordan Love comes into being, and it's like, good freaking Lord. Now, I have no illusion to the fact that eventually he's going to have some bad draft classes, not just picks, classes that are just going to be rough, you know, like, 2020, sans Jordan Love, 2021, also not super great, you know, those are going to happen. So, if you're on a hot streak, you're just kind of feeling the winds of things, and you got your finger on the pulse, just lean into it, man.
Hey, Kyle again. I just want to wrap up this this draft discussion here, because there's a couple drafts that I think we might need to just pay homage to since it is draft season in our recent history, because as I was looking for some trend lines here, there is some just beautiful, beautiful drafts. Wolf, okay. Ron Wolf, probably best. I would say his free agency work was more important, but he actually had his first year and his last year were awesome, and he had one great one in between. In 92, he took Edgar Bennett, Robert Brooks, and Mark Chmura in his first year. In his last year, he took, in 2000, he took Clifton, Tauscher, Kabir, Baja, Biamila, and Bubba Franks. But in 1995, he took Adam Timmerman, Antonio Freeman, and William Henderson. So there's your championship team there. Check this out, though. I mean, you got to be kidding me. So, 1956, Horace Gregg, Bob Skowronski, and Bart Starr. You follow that up, 1957, the next year, Paul Hornung, Ron Kramer. Then, again, the year after that, 1958, Jim Taylor, Jerry Kramer, and Ray Nitschke. Dude. That's just silly.
Yep.
Hey, but you know what? This might be Brian's third year in a row of home runs. Possibly. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. What do we got? Walker, Wyatt, Watson, right? Dobbs, Rasheed Walker, and Zach Tom. That's a freaking good class already. That's looking like that's got possibilities. And then you've got this latest class with the receivers and the tight ends. He's got a chance here. So I'm hoping for a three-peat from our buddy Gutekunst. But I just wanted to highlight those drafts. Cause, I mean, so seriously, you get in 1958, they got three Hall of Famers in one draft.
Yeah.
Come on, baby. Let's do it again.
Might be a little bit easier when they have 30 rounds, but yeah, no, that is pretty wild with the pack. And I think it really just goes to show fundamentally, I don't know how many people argue this, but how critical draft and develop is. You want to find a Super Bowl caliber team, go find where they built through the draft. I referenced Seattle. We know when they were good and it followed just a couple years after some really good draft classes. You look at the Green Bay Packers. What happens when they draft that well? They win Super Bowls and championships, right? There is a very obvious correlation between having really good drafts and really good football teams. And, you know, hopefully championships in our case. And I think that's a reason to be encouraged because not only do we have the quarterback, but you know, there's a little bit of a lag to it because generally the rookies don't come in and win Super Bowls, right? So a couple years after, if you have two good classes in a row, and we'll see how good, you know, we don't know yet. We're just going into year three for the 2022 class. We're going into year two with the 2023 class. Hopefully get another one here. But if he's able to pull off a draft that's roughly as good, I don't see any reason why this team isn't set up to be a championship caliber. I mean, you know, just like a lot of the other eras that we've looked at, you know, the Bart Starr era, the Brett Favre era, the Aaron Rodgers era, you know, especially in these windows, you know, Brett Favre's tenure wasn't always the greatest. There's a very specific window around when they won the Super Bowl. Same with Rodgers. Around that time they won the Super Bowl was when I think they were at their best, with the exception of a handful of years here or there. So just gotta keep pushing. And hopefully can capitalize because this is all going to peak. And it's not going to take very long. In a couple of years, this thing's going to be at its peak. But anyways, why don't we take our first break? We will come right back and hear from Aaron. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And Aaron here. I'm just listening to your podcast on Wednesday. It's about the new kickoff rules and how they're changing the rules and they're not doing anything for the sake of the game and whatever. It's all just for like a facade of safety. I believe when you're considering that, when you didn't take into account the Disney broadcasts when you were talking about how they were going to make the game extra awesome, because there's a Toy Story broadcast and the first downs are measured by Twinkies, and there's players getting kidnapped by the claws, and it's in Andy's room. How is that not great for
That's
just
true.
The awesomeness of the game?
Yeah.
But anyways, on a much more real note.
You know, interestingly enough, that actually does play into exactly what I said, which is the appeal. And it's not that I'm against it. I'm not, because I think it's cool that they're reaching out to kids. But it falls in line with what I said, which is their attempt is to reach out to non-football fans. That's who they want to make football awesome for. So they want to change things to make it more appealing. So kids, presumably, I mean, if your kid already likes football, he doesn't need this, but trying to appeal to a demographic that generally is not going to sit around and watch football by slapping it on, you know, Disney and seeing if kids will watch it then. This is just what they're doing.
Even though that is a very real note to me, that was a fun broadcast. I wish they would all do that instead of getting Tony Romo as far as the Disney broadcast goes. But anyways, the hip drop tackle, right? I understand the principle of what it is. You can look at the definition of it. But then I go watch videos of what would be taken away and penalized. Like, if you do the hip drop tackle, you're such an evil person. But they just look like normal tackles.
Right.
And so I'm really confused as to what exactly a hip drop tackle actually is in a practical sense. Like, I 100% get it on paper, but what is it? Like, I've watched videos of it that make no sense as to when it's going to be called. Like, I've heard, like, basically some people in the league, like, reports that refs are going to pick and choose when to call it, and I don't know how factual that is, but hope it's not that way. But as going on social media and seeing like people being like, oh, I played football all the way through college, I know what this tackle is. It's very obvious. And then you ask them to put together a video and explain exactly what the hip drop tackle is, because they say that hip drop tackle is not necessary, and they're saying how actually dangerous it is, and it's like they come back with just saying, oh, if you don't know what it is, then that's your problem. It's like, no, it's not our problem. It's a fan problem. It's a, like, integrity of the league problem. Like, for reals, go put together a video, a highlight reel, and show us, explaining in detail what a hip drop tackle is. But then those fun people on social media are like, no, that's not my job.
3 minutes got him. He'll call back. But yeah, I mean, the issue isn't even necessarily that we don't know what it is. I'm sure, you know, we could, you and I could both look at a video and say, yes, that's a hip drop tackle. The question is, where do you draw the line, right? Because the language is always going to be, this is the same with everything, like a catch and everything else. Nothing is nice and even and boxy. Like, there's one way to tackle, and every tackle looks exactly the same for this style of tackle. And then if you do a hip drop tackle, they all look the same. That's not true. And even if you look at, they put together a video, and you look at some of them, and it's, you know, very obvious, and obviously somebody gets really hurt, and it's like, oh, that's, well, it's an obvious thing, and it doesn't always have to happen, and somebody got hurt, so that must be awful. Then you look at some of the other ones, and I'm like, that's just a tackle, bro. Like, you know, sometimes it's seems unnecessary, and sometimes you look at it and go, I don't know how else you tackle. You know, because you look at, for example, momentum. Let's say you're running past somebody, and you grab them. And they're running forward. What happens? You swing around them, right? You swing around the other direction as your weight pulls them down. I mean, some of these are going to be incidental, which I don't think the NFL necessarily cares, but there's going to be all kinds of gray area. was that really a hip drop tackle? There's going to be tons of bad calls where you look at it and go, not only is the rule stupid, but that doesn't even meet the definition. And then there's a question of the actual definition, because the people who are talking to you are like, well, you can obviously tell. Okay, well, sometimes you can obviously tell and sometimes you can't, but whether or not you can see it and identify it is different than what the actual language says. Again, this is where nuance comes in, because you know, it's like saying, well, obviously I know what a catch is. Well, yes, in the simplest sense, we know what a catch is. But if you really want to know where the line is, you have to understand the language of it. And that's where things get messy. So Article 18 says hip drop tackle. It is a foul if a player uses the following technique to bring a runner to the ground. They have to, I'm guessing, meet both of these. A, grab the runner with both hands or wrap the runner with both arms. Okay, that's almost every single tackle. B is unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. And that is a 15-yard penalty and automatic first down. So again, we can probably draw a picture-perfect example of what that looks like in times when it's unnecessary and just go, yep, you don't need to do that, et cetera, right? You could have just drove right through the side of him. You didn't have to grab yourself and swivel around the other side and then drop your butt on his knee. But then there are other times, like for example, when you're catching a guy from behind, which is the example that I saw, and you're trying to stop their forward momentum. Again, the idea that you're going to tackle them from behind is nonsense. The best you can do is essentially you either grab their feet and try to stop them that way. You're not going to drive through the back of them because they're running in that direction. Or you have to grab them and do what? Drop your weight. But I guess so long as you don't swivel, it's not a problem. Well, okay, when is it swiveling? How much movement is swiveling? What if I swing my body a little bit, but not like a ton? What if I, you know, because obviously my weight's going to come down on their legs. I'm landing on, that's what a tackle is. You land on top of a guy. Is it just if I happen to touch their legs when I do it or what? So again, yes, it's very obvious what a hip drop tackle is. What's not obvious is exactly where the line is. That's what's not obvious.
Anyways, I just got hit by the 3-minute monster. Dang. Before I got to a really busy street, so I'm calling back later. Anyways, so on the topic of this kickoff rule, I'm like actually really excited about it.
Yeah, me too.
Just from like a draft and like player, like personnel, like perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm curious if they're gonna have, if teams are gonna have special kickers or train like an extra, like speed dude, like a receiver or a tight end, like one of the guys that you want to go after a player that's gonna go tackle the returner. I'm curious if they're gonna have one of those guys trained to do those kickoffs in some cases. Because there's going to be a lot more benefit to having an extra like defender out there versus just a kicker who sometimes can run after a player. And in the case of like Pat McAfee and on occasion Nathan Crosby can actually tackle a dude. So I'm curious how certain teams are going to look at the kicking personnel from that perspective. Like, are they going to have it's just an extra special teamer out there or whatever. And then it's also going to be interesting to see, like, is there a possibility that at times you're going to have, like, a big defender out there to return the kick? Because if all you have to do is break a couple tackles and whatever, and so you have a big bowling ball, like you have Devontae Wyatt out there who's a fast dude and big and hard to take down, is there like a time, like not all the time, he's not going to become a regular returner, but it would be fun to see like if he can just barrel through a couple dudes and you come into the open field. I'm just really excited to see how this new kickoff rule is going to affect everything. I think it does open up a lot more possibilities. It's going to be nice to see that players can't just fair catch and get the ball at the 25. Like, that was bogus. Yeah. So I'm glad that we learned from that. But anyways, so I'm excited for it. It's going to be fun to see how this goes. And I don't want to get hit by the 3-minute monster again. So I'm just going to say go Pack Go and have a good day. Hopefully it's not too snowy where you're at. Like it is here in Minnesota.
Nope, no snow.
It's second winter if you.
It is getting cold, though.
Got that. I don't know. Anyways, okay. Peace out. Bye.
Yeah, we hit, was that in February or early March, where we were getting 60s and upwards of 70, and I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, El Nino's hitting, and I thought it was going to last a while. Apparently, it lasted like 2 weeks, and then it got freezing cold. We did actually get a big snow, now that I actually forgot about it, but it was just a day, and it was gone by probably midday, I don't know. But, yeah, all the snow's gone now. We're going to get a little bit warmer weather starting tomorrow, getting up into the 50s, so that's... I guess what we're going to call grilling weather now. Now that I've gotten spoiled by 70s, 50 is suddenly not warm anymore. But I'm hoping that tomorrow gets some nice weather. I'm going to do some chicken thighs again. Love chicken thighs. I've been on a fish kick. Did tilapia and salmon. And so I'm going to get some chicken thighs going. Then I got some more tilapia. And then I'm going to do another little meat order, figure out what we're going to do. I got to get a ham. I haven't made a ham in quite a while. I've only done it like twice, but there's not much to it. You're mostly just heating these things up and slapping a glaze on it, but it is delicious. Get a good spiral ham. Anyways, I'm hungry, so I'm, you know. By the way, I've also been on a rice kick, like fish and rice and whatnot, and like what you do to the rice is kind of a big question. So I went out and loaded up on some sauces. If you have recommendations, huge fan of Bang Bang sauce. I got some gochujang. I got teriyaki, soy. I got this, it's like garlic, spicy garlic stuff. I forget what it's called. But if you have any recommendations, just let me know. I would say I doubt it as far as the specific questions with Devontae Wyatt returning and like wide receivers kicking, but it would be kind of funny. And you could see the merit of it because you don't really need a guy that's got a cannon for a leg, you know? But I'm guessing you still want some relative consistency and accuracy, so you're probably going to want to stick to what you know. And like I said, it looks kind of like a similar to a running play, and I think I'd want Devontae Wyatt returning punts as much as I'd want him in the backfield, which is to say a little bit, but not a ton. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of innovation, because honestly, you know, we talk about these things and there is some precedent as far as what you do to succeed, but they've only kind of scratched the surface, like what was done in that fake football league. So I'm hoping the NFL minds will get on it and start coming up with some stuff. But anywho's, why don't we take our final break? We'll come back and we got a bunch of Kyle from Madison.
What's up, Ryan? Kyle from Madison.
What's up?
So I didn't win the whatever crazy $1 billion last night, so that was surprising. Can you imagine my shock this morning when I found out I wasn't the one that won that? I'm still recovering. However, I think there is still like a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, dude. Powerball's a good idea.
I bought. So I just want to tell you, like,
after all that talk, by the way, I never bought a ticket. So I'm we'll see if I end up getting myself to buy a Powerball. I'm sitting here thinking like, oh man, what am I going to do when I win? It's like, I'm not even going to buy a ticket. But again, it's more about, for me, the excitement of thinking about winning. The only reason I have to buy a ticket is because it's like, you know, it just makes it a little bit more real, but not really. It's still fun to just think about. But then somebody wins and it's like, man, now I got to like daydream about what happens if you win like $200 million, which you end up taking home, what, like $75 million? Like, that's stupid. I didn't do nothing with $75 million. It's dumb. I can't take over the world with this garbage.
Personally, I don't even want the headache that comes with $1 billion. I know it sounds good, but I was looking at the statistics of people that win over a certain several hundred million dollars in the lottery that end up bankrupt within 10 years, and I believe 100%.
That's stupid.
So, I don't know. I guess maybe I'll take
the... So I said, listen. You don't spend it. First thing you do is you drive to somebody that manages money. Probably not a person, a company, right? You go to the company and you say, I need to talk to the person in charge of this massive company. And they're like, well, we can't just... And I'm like, listen to me, jag off. I got $1 billion. I want to speak to the president of this company. And then you talk to the president and you say, I would like your company to manage $1 billion. And they're going to be like, oh my good Lord. And they're going to kick everybody else out of the building. They're going to shut the building down for the day. They're going to bring in everybody from their staff into the office, everybody that matters, the most brilliant minds into that room. And I'm going to say, look, I'm taking $10 million of this. Okay. The rest of it,
you're going to go make me money with it, and that's it. And then I want dividends, right? I don't know exactly how that works. I think there's certain ones that pay that or whatever. I don't know. If not, I'll just draw down, whatever. But every year, I want 1/3 of the increase. What's the tax term for that? Gain, your whatever, the gain. That's it. So, you know, if the fund goes up $30 million, I'll take my $10 million. I'll be on my way. You take the remaining $20 million. You reinvest it, everybody's happy. You don't just throw it in a freaking Chase bank account and just start buying crap.
The payments, you get a new, you can screw up and start over every year, right?
No, don't do that.
But if don't I do win, that. I just want to let you know, like some crazy money, I'm going to build a Packernet studio.
Yes.
Pay everybody, you know, like 100 grand a year. Love and. It. Maybe we can have like a Packers variety show, you know, once a week, you and I.
Yeah.
At the studio. So, but you might have to move to Madison, though. You might have to move to Madison. I'm just saying. Probably going to have Packernet Studio.
Right down the street. So I don't.
Well, care. One of them. Let's build one in Green Bay, too, while we're at it.
Yeah.
I guess. We'll have a couple.
Bro, if you win the lottery, reach out because I already know exactly where. I'm not even kidding you. So, right next to or across the street from. You think I haven't spent a lot of time on this? Like where the practice field is. So I don't know much about, but there's the field, the Lambeau field, then there's the practice field, and then like across the street, there's like a pile of crap there. And apparently they just built some really nice houses. If you go to Google Maps, you don't even see it, but there's really nice, not even houses, they're like apartments. They're $1 million each. Next to that is some open area. You can buy that. So I'm going to spend $1 million, maybe $1.9 million on my apartment. It's going to be a part-time thing. I'll go there once in a while. And then right next to that, I'm going to buy up that plot of land that is across the street from the where the practice field is, Lambeau, whatever. It's to the, what would that be, the east. And it's north of where these new apartments are. And I'm going to buy up all that land. I'm going to demolish everything on that land. And I'm going to build like a four-story office tower or something. And in that office tower is going to be the Packernet Studios. That's already been my plan. I keep checking it every once in a while to make sure the land is still there. I don't know if it still is. Maybe somebody bought it. I will cry. I should probably just stop looking and just pretend that it's still there. But it's like, you know, obviously it's going to be like an office studio, but it's going to be just kind of a laid back place to hang out. You know, there's going to be a giant studio for video and audio recording and everything. Obviously, there's going to be a dope kitchen in there. With a garage door that opens up to the outside so we can bring smokers out like during game day or whatever. People can come out. We can give out some food to the people, you know. There's going to be a swimming pool, like the whole nine yards. It's going to be like a dope like basement swimming pool with the whole, it's kind of like, what do you call it, up in the Dells where they got like the slides and the little bell thing, ding, 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 the giant bucket port, you know, like the whole freaking thing, dude. We're doing it up. Maybe on the main floor it looks like a professional building, but the rest of it is just going to be like a dope place to hang out. It's going to be a giant theater in there. There's going to be a game room, which is a bunch of PCs set up. There'd be some TVs if you want to play Xbox or something stupid. But, you know, PCs, and just in there freaking gaming or whatever. And then, so I'm next door at one of my homes, my $1 million apartment. And it's like, all right, I got to go to work. I go in, I record. And then I freaking hang out. And then the kids are like, hey, can we come over and do the pool? I'm like, bro, do whatever you want. I don't care. I'll be over there in a little bit. Just want to kill some people with the Ikat Claw real quick, and then I'll be right there. So, yeah, I've thought about it a little bit.
We wanted Indianapolis, too, for our combine coverage.
Yeah.
So we'll work on that. I'll let you know once I win tonight.
Appreciate
it. We'll get into details and stuff. Okay. My lawyer get a hold of you. But, yeah, it should be fun. So I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. I haven't really looked at the reaction yet, but am I the only one that loves the new kickoff rule? Like, hip drop thing, stupid. Yep. Hate it. You know we're going to have to watch it all preseason. They're going to call, like, every play, and then, like, the first 4 or 5 weeks, it's going to be so dumb and, you know, possibly probably 50-50 that we get a game freaking lost because of it. Hate that. It's stupid. It's like when the DNR... Like, let's say there's some invasive snail species and the Department of Natural Resources will, like, introduce some animal that eats those.
Mm-hmm.
But But then the problem is the animal that eats those then runs out of control, and then they'll
that's
have to
an
like
invasive
introduce
species.
Another
yep.
animal that exactly. eats the animal that eats the other animal. It just goes on and on. You're just solving problems that you created. That's what it feels
exactly.
like for the NFL. But dude, I love the kickoff rule. So I don't know, like I don't know what the zeitgeist of the NFL world is feeling on this, but if people are playing it or not. But I really like it. And I think hold on, I gotta call you back.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy and better than my several attempts at trying to explain that. But that's essentially what I was trying to get at, where it's like you're trying to fix a problem. And the only problem with your analogy is that it a lot of times it actually does fix the problem. It just creates a new one. But in this case, sometimes it doesn't even fix the problem. But anyways, yes, that's exactly what it is. And then you see the problem and you look at it and you just go, how could you be so stupid as to create this problem, you idiot?
Hey, Kyle again. So continuing my point on the kickoff here, I really like it, and it's going to be super interesting. Like, it is a completely freaking different play than really what we've ever seen. And I guess if I was a GM, I might be a little pissed, because, like, you're going to need a completely different type of player for that, and you're going to need more of them. But there's still time to do that, and I do think this is going to be an arms race for creativity in this play, I really think. And if you can be the one that figures out, you know, the first quarter of the season how to maximize this and be ahead of the curve, you know, I really think you can turn some games in your favor immediately in the season when maybe you're still kind of ironing out the kinks and the rest of the game. You might be able to get some cheap offense and some really nice, even some points, if you can be the first one to scheme up, you know, version 1.1. of this. Now, granted, the whole league's going to copy it and then they're going to counter it. But if you can at least get, you know, be the innovator the first time, it takes a couple weeks for the league to adjust. So I just think, man, there's going to be like back passes. I think this opens up a lot of stuff too, where the onside kick was pretty much dead anyway. I know that you have to declare it, you can still do it. But like, outside of that, I mean, let's be honest, the kickoff's the time you go to the bathroom and get a drink or whatever. I mean, except for like...
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people reference, like, we got to do something about the... mostly people in the media or whatever, not like fans, but the onside kick, it's like... And again, you can still do an onside kick. So, number one, onside kicks are rare. Number two, onside kicks are almost never recovered, so they're not super interesting. Number three, they are... most of the time, almost every single onside kick is basically declared. You know it's coming. So the only thing that's really being removed from the game is the ultra, 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 ultra rare surprise onside kick, which, to be honest, they made some changes to the rules already that basically killed the onside kick anyway. So nobody even does surprise onside kicks anymore. So it was already dead. And it's, I just, you know... If anything, I mean, if you desperately want the onside kick, that's fine, but make it interesting, you know, find a way to do it. But, and by interesting, I mean, find a way for there to be an onside kick and make it more recoverable. But I don't know, man, I don't care about it. I haven't really noticed anybody else cares about it. Like, if that's the worst thing that happens, like, hey, the kickoff is back, it's going to be happening more and more. And you're more likely to see, whether it's because of the style or just because there's more of them, you're going to see more big returns, more touchdown returns. It's going to be a more impactful play. But the surprise onside kick is gone. Like, gives a crap.
What? One play in the playoffs, Keyshawn takes it out, did fumble, but we got it back. I'm just saying, other than that, kickoff's been pretty meh. So I don't know, like, how... I feel like you might rather have Reed back there, though, a little shiftier guy who can cut. I feel like this might be closer to, like, how you want a punt returner, just from the things they can do with their body, but not necessarily. I mean, I think this is going to set up more like a running play.
That's what it is, yeah.
So I'm super excited about that. I don't know if there's a lot of people hating on it. I do think maybe it looks a little gimmicky, but I think it's cool. And I think it's an exciting thing to, like, I can get behind it, because I can see how you could use this, especially this first year, because there's going to be some cheat code stuff, I think, in this, that they're not going to have a chance to change till the end of the year. They're probably going to have to refine it a little bit at the end of the year.
Sure.
So, you know, in a year where you're kind of a top six team that's looking at a Super Bowl, you got to make sure that, the kickoff is going to be a strength for you.
Yeah.
Or at a minimum a neutral. It cannot be something that you get killed on. So I'm hoping the Packers innovate on this. There's a huge opportunity to do so, in my opinion. And I'm looking forward to it. Kick drop, stupid. Very stupid. But the kickoff, I'm actually, you know, put me on the side of being excited. So,
yeah, in a year when you're on track to be one of the top teams in football, you're certainly a Super Bowl contender. You don't want the issue to be you're lagging in innovation on special teams. The league is passing you by. That's not where you want to be. So, I agree 100%. And, yeah, the reason it's more of a run play, I mean, if you think about it, is because essentially there's two lines, like, lined up already. So from a north-south perspective, there's almost no variation. Whereas in the past, because they came from so much depth and because a lot of times the kick return team would also sprint backwards, so there would be, you know, you would have guys not just spread out from side to side, but from multiple different depths, and that created a much more overall space, a lot less people in a confined area. Now, with everybody lined up right where they are, you essentially have this giant wall, and then you have somebody that has to run and navigate and try to find a hole to get through and get north and south. It's very similar to a run play. Just imagine, you know, I don't know. I mean, very weird run play that's like a fourth and one, but you're passing the ball backwards like a bunch. So obviously you're going to gain a bunch of ground before you get to that big wall, but then, you know, what you do once you get there and how you open up holes and everything, that's going to be kind of where the money is. And again, it's similar to a running play in that you want a guy that can kind of get there and find a crease and get through it, but it's not quite that. So I don't know. It's going to be real interesting to kind of watch this play out.
Hey, one last thing here. I just want to call and comment on Aaron's really great point about how the Packers organization, although it is not nonprofit, how it kind of operates like one as far as there being a goal beyond just profit. Like it's about the team first and the profit second. And I think that's really an interesting point that he makes there, and I agree with it. And as I've been beating the drum, obviously, about how we are superior potentially by a lot if we do things right, because we don't have a single owner. I mean, this is a great point that Aaron makes there. If we look at, now we don't have any other teams in this country, but if you look over in Europe, right, where player or fan-owned teams are much more common, they're still not, I wouldn't say common, but they exist. It's kind of interesting because if you don't know, like in European soccer, for example, the club level, not international teams where you're playing for your country, but if you're playing for clubs, so like the Packers, for example, but if you're let's say you're a fan-owned team in England, for example, the way soccer works in the rest of the world, which we don't have this type of thing in any of American sports, is they have something called relegation and promotion. So you have 20 teams usually in a table. You get 3 points for a win, 1 for a tie, 0 for a loss. And at the end of the year, the top 3 teams or so that have, you know, the most points are, you know, 1, 2, 3, the one with the most points wins. But the most interesting thing is the bottom 3 in a table usually are kicked out of the major league, so to speak. They're kicked out of Division I. And the teams in the top 3, the second division, get promoted into the big leagues. So this has this effect where when it's a fan-owned team of a European soccer team, in this example, if the fan and the organization that they create doesn't generate enough money to stay competitive, they're literally kicked out of the majors. And what usually happens is if that team doesn't get back in the first year or two, they're screwed. And so that kind of has this effect of just, you know, only there's not so many fan teams, but there are a few. What's cool about the NFL in regards to the Packers is we have the profit share, right? So there's like this baseline amount of money that you're going to get as a fan-owned team through revenue sharing, through television rights, and that kind of stuff that just doesn't exist in other international sports models. So the Packers kind of have the best of both worlds because they have this baseline profit sharing, And they also don't have to worry about being kicked out of the major leagues because everybody's getting a share of it. So excellent point by Aaron. I just wanted to add that from kind of a worldwide perspective, what makes us unique, but also what makes us kind of similar to some other teams. But we have some serious advantages. So awesome point, man.
Yeah, and in a way, you mentioned, you phrased it as an advantage, and it's true that it is an advantage, and it's almost as if, in a weird way, the expectation should be higher. You know, the NFL is built for parity as far as having just general rules laid out that, you know, tries to pull the bottom teams up and the top teams down, but there are other variables, such as how you run your team and who runs your team, that can be a benefit. Or a negative. And the Packers are just constantly running in a surplus. So the fortunate thing is that it generally means that we are a better team. The, I guess, not really unfortunate thing, but the other side of the coin is you should, right? I mean, that's the expectation. On one hand, I mean, you can look at it and say, what a great, amazing thing to have had such sustained success for such a long time. And on the other hand, you look at it and go, well, yeah, you better. We're fortunate enough to be the only team not run by a complete incompetent moron who wants to put, you know, financial self-interest ahead of just winning for the sake of winning. And in Green Bay, it's winning for the sake of winning. So, yeah, it is a bit of an unfair disadvantage, but I'm okay with that. As long as we can make sure that we have competent people running the ship, the Packers should continue to be successful. You think, well, the Packers haven't always been successful, right? They were unsuccessful in the past. Well, think about it this way. What is the biggest issue that generally happens when it comes to mismanagement? It's mismanagement of what? Teams that are incompetent mismanage what? They mismanage the salary cap. When did the salary cap start? 1994. That's probably shouldn't be surprising, but interestingly enough, that is almost the exact moment the Packers became awesome. And they really haven't not been awesome since. So as long as there's a salary cap and 31 other teams that mismanage it, the Packers should continue to have another several years of sustained success. Now, granted, you end up struggling with a quarterback or whatever, that could be a problem. But if you have a quarterback and you have the situation that we have running the franchise, we're going to be fine. Anyways, I'm going to leave you guys with that. I got to get out of here. You guys have a good rest of your night, day, whatever. Have a good one. Bye-bye.